All right, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome back
to the Flake Chicks podcast.
I'm Jane.
And I'm Allison.
And how are you, Allison?
I'm good. I have absolutely nothing going on today.
That's awesome.
Really nice.
That's really nice. Me either.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah, it's nice.
It's nice.
We're celebrating a friend's birthday tomorrow with a very small
bit of
fun. So
very few people.
Very few people, but we're gonna watch
pod.
But we're gonna watch a movie. So
yeah,
it'll be fun.
It's
the pod we've been with for the past 3 months
since literally quarantine. okay, this movie.
Oh my god. Okay, so we were like, well, we're gonna do a comedy to accompany Easy A and Death of Stalin. So Allison has been wanting to show me this
but
for
it's
a while.
Hard to find.
Yeah. You wouldn't steal a car.
Yes, we would.
Yes, we would.
We pirated this movie.
Yes, we did. We rarely do that, but we did for this movie because it just kept getting taken off of things.
Yeah, it was on like way too, like it was on like 3 or 4 different things, and then all of a sudden it's not on anything.
Yeah.
So, we already have more than enough streaming services. I'm not buying a streaming service for this one movie.
Yes.
So, this movie came out in 2014.
And it's a star-studded cast.
I don't know who has been letting me sleep on this movie. I've never heard anyone talk about this movie.
Me either.
And I don't know why.
I don't either.
It's a good freaking movie.
It's hilarious. So it's a rom-com satire.
Yes.
And I know neither of us are like the most fond of rom-coms. And I think that it either takes really good acting or like
A great new story.
A great new story like Eternal Sunshine.
Yeah.
Or Silver Linings Playbook.
Yeah.
But this, I love a good satire.
Oh, this is so good.
It's so funny. This is like a masterclass in satire, honestly.
So this stars Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd and Amy Poehler.
I'm going to skip over people that we don't know. Christopher Maloney, Max Greenfield, Bill Hader, Ellie Kemper, Jason Mendoza, Melanie Lynskey, Ed Helms, way more people. John Stamos makes an appearance.
Yes.
Adam Scott makes an appearance.
Yes.
Rashida Jones makes an appearance. There's so many people.
It's so strange.
Judge Judith Scheinman makes an appearance.
Yes, yes.
That's right. The Judge Judy. That scene actually changed my life when we saw Judge Judy.
Yeah. When
I could not believe it. And so I'm so excited to talk about this movie. If you guys knew about this movie and you didn't tell us.
How dare you.
Shame on you.
How dare you.
Shame on you. This is a movie that deserves to be talked
about.
This is so funny.
So
we're talking about.
Yeah, this movie doesn't get any attention. I'd never heard of it.
It gets no attention. And it did terrible in the box office, too. The budget for this movie was $3 million. It only made, in box office, $82,000. That's horrible.
That's a terrible
box office. I mean, I've seen worse box offices for sure. I mean,
I've seen
Gooby,
better box office numbers for worse movies.
Oh, I have too. Listen, and I've seen worse box office, but like, because I think Gooby is the worst box office I've ever seen. They spent $6 million and they made $3,000.
Yeah.
That's horrible. That's abysmal. That's maybe some of the worst I've ever heard. This is not good though. $3 million to only gross $82,000 and with a cast this big.
Yeah.
Where I imagine a good portion of the budget was spent just getting the cast.
Yes.
So,
but it's interesting because the writer and director, isn't it the same guy?
Yeah.
Michael Showalter. Anyway.
No, that's the producer. It's David Wayne.
David Wayne. Anyway, David Wayne wrote and directed one of my very favorite comedies, Wet Hot American Summer. And pretty much this entire cast is in Wet Hot American Summer.
I don't know how this failed so bad.
I don't either.
I think maybe...
Wet Hot American Summer was really successful.
Was it ahead of its time? Maybe.
Maybe. I mean, 2014... Maybe.
I feel like I don't understand how this movie could ever be ahead of its time, because it feels like it's perfect for any moment.
Yes.
But, hey, maybe the world wasn't ready for this.
Maybe it's more of a 2020 film.
But 2020 is ready for this, and we're bringing it to the people.
We are.
So here we go. Let's just jump into the plot.
So good. Okay.
Joel and Molly have dinner with an unhappy couple, Kyle and Karen, and recount how they... I love that their names are Kyle and Karen.
Yeah, it's Bill Hader and Ellie Kemper.
Because I know that there's no way that the writers could have possibly known this, but Kyle and Karen in 2020 would become the names of the...
Stereotypical white couple. Yeah.
How would they have known that?
I don't know.
Did he make this?
Ahead of its time.
Ahead of its time, where she's like, sit your ass down, Karen, I'm done with the story. It's like, wow.
Whoa.
It aged better than it possibly could have ever thought.
Yes.
Anyway, and they recount how they first began dating. At the time, Molly owned a small independent candy store, Upper Sweet Sides.
You've got mail.
Yeah. That was being bought out by Joel's company, a larger candy corporation called CSR. Joel lived with his girlfriend. Candy Systems Research, by the way.
Candy Systems Research, such a whimsical name.
Joel lived with his girlfriend, Tiffany,
played by the girl who plays Robin.
Yes.
In How I Met Your Mother.
Yes. I think that's Melanie Lynskey, maybe.
No. Lynskey.
Oh, she's the...
She was the bird in...
Yeah.
Over the...
In Over There on the Wall. And she's, what, her friend, Barbara, yeah, or whatever. Yeah.
Jason Mantzoukas' wife.
Yes. Until he catches her cheating on him with his coworker Trevor.
Oh my god, this scene is so funny.
I already know that this plot is not going to at all capture the funny, what's good about this movie. So, because this is all going to seem like pretty standard rom-com stuff until you watch it.
And then it's like, what?
Like, for example, so the first time we meet Trevor, Jason Mantzoukas and Paul Rudd are throwing around a football in their office.
They're just playing around.
And Jason Mantzoukas goes too long, and he falls out the window.
And he's, like, hanging off with his, like, hands hanging onto the window.
Yeah, he's, like, about to fall. And Paul Rudd is trying to help him up when Trevor walks in. Trevor just, like, truly is the worst.
He's like... What you would, any time you would expect, like, the rival.
Yeah, he is that.
He's the rival.
He literally is, like, so he comes in and he's like, hey, heard about the Dick Ricker account, which is also the account they're fighting over.
Dick Ricker,
which makes no sense. We have no idea what's going on with this account. There's no, like, real details. And anyway, like, basically, there's this part where he goes, is your girlfriend Tiffany home? And he's like, yeah, she should be. And he goes... Okay. And he's like, why? And he's like, no reason.
And then he takes an unwrapped condom.
From a bowl.
Of unwrapped condoms.
That they keep in their office.
But they're not wrapped.
Yeah, they're unwrapped. He twirls it around on his finger a little bit, and he leaves. And then it cuts to Bill Hader going, sounds like this guy's trying to get with your girlfriend. And Paul goes, well, in hindsight, I agree with you. But at the time, it seemed like he was just grabbing a rubber from the bowl of rubbers and then going to meet my girlfriend. So, yeah, Tiffany's cheating. It's
and
so
he,
sad.
He comes home, and he's like, Tiffany, hey!
Oh my god, it's so cool. There's, like, clothes everywhere.
Hello!
He, like, can't find her.
Hey! And then
Tiffany?
And then he finally gets in there, and they're just, like, fucking really loud.
And then only once he turns around to propose to her does he see that she's having sex.
Even though they're, like, moaning, and it's just so loud.
So, on their way to the same Halloween party that night, Joel and Molly meet.
They're both dressed as Ben Franklin.
In the exact same outfit. They initially fight. Okay, so they run into each other at a store where she's picking up bobbing apples and he's picking up party tomatoes.
Yes.
And they drop their stuff and they're annoyed.
And they just keep fighting over it.
They just keep, like, being like, oh, great, our party's in the same building. Oh, great, we must be on the same floor. But finally, they end up going on a date where Joel meets Molly's son from a previous relationship. Okay, hold on, we skip. They fight. Joel says some hurtful things, and
Molly leaves, and he's like, shit.
Shit. This is a running theme. They constantly go, shit, anytime they mess up.
Like they do in rom-coms.
And then, so then they're at a bookstore, and Molly runs into Joel. She's with her friend Wanda, and he's with his brother.
I thought she was with her Aunt Flo.
She is with Aunt Flo, but she's also with Wanda, because Wanda's there with her initially.
You're right.
And, Joel's there with his brother, who's played by Max Greenfield.
Who's amazing.
Schmidt from New Girl. Literally so... He's one of my favorite parts, I think.
Big
truly,
bro.
He's like, what are you gonna... Why not, big bro? Like, the way he acts is so dumb. And so, they... Anyway, they meet. They have a little fight, and she's like, wouldn't you rather be at a chain bookstore like Burns and Nurbles? And they fight, and then but then they connect over their
love
of
fiction books.
They both love fiction.
So you like fiction?
Oh my god. That is too funny. That is actually too funny.
I love fiction.
And they, so then they decide to get a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
You know, whatever happened to
just
a good
plain old
cup
of
coffee.
So funny.
So they go on a date. And at the end, Joel comes up to Molly's house where she meets Molly's son from a previous relationship. Which she didn't mention. Yeah, she never literally mentions that she has a son at all.
But then he comes down.
The son becomes, like, absolutely infatuated with
Joel. He calls him daddy. I mean, Joel.
Like, literally immediately.
Are you my new daddy? And he's like, just such a fucking Hallmark movie.
It's so funny. And so, then they're leaving, though, and Joel admits that he's not over his relationship with Tiffany. And Molly leaves angrily.
You think you're also, Molly's a klutz?
You think you're the only one that's ever been hurt, Joel?
Molly's a klutz, and she just falls downstairs
all the time. So, Joel apologizes, and the two begin dating. Yeah, there's this big, long apology sequence where Molly's trying on all these different ridiculous outfits with her friend. And Joel's, like, practicing
an apology speech.
He's like, I just have really been feeling pancakey. No, that sounds stupid. That sounds stupid. Yeah, it does. But then they break up after a trip to Molly's parents' house.
Oh my god, this scene, I, like, grabbed Allison's hand.
Who are revealed to be white supremacists.
Oh my god, they're, like, my perfect little Aryan princess.
Yeah, literally.
And Joel's Jewish.
Yeah.
Paul Rudd is Jewish.
Yeah. So they go to Molly's parents' house. Molly's mom attempts to have sex with Joel.
And then
he's like, no, I love your daughter. And they're like, wow, you passed the test.
They come out from behind the curtains, and then he's like, I want to fuck your mom.
He's like, you're the only one that's ever passed the test. And then, yeah, then at dinner, they basically are like, did you know there's a race war going on? And Joel's like, So then they get home, and she's like, I'm sorry, Joel, I didn't think it was a big deal.
And he's like, your parents are white supremacists.
And she's like, so they're eccentric. So fucking dumb. So they break up because of this, which is fair.
I
would break up.
I would also. Of this. Yeah, me too.
Joel begins dating Tiffany again, and Molly begins dating her banker, Egbert.
Ed Helms.
It's so friggin' funny.
He just changes his name all the time. Hey, it's Eggflip.
Because nobody can ever remember it, and so he just goes with it. On their first date, they go to this Mexican restaurant, and Molly hates Mexican food.
Mm-hmm.
And they have this conversation where she's like, well, I'm really passionate about, like, I guess, like, fiction books. I like reading fiction. Do you like it? And he's like, no, it's not real. You know that, right?
You know it's not real. Why would I like something that's not real?
And this is my favorite, one of my favorite ones. He's, like, talking to her, and he goes, you know, when I was in high school, we read The Great Gatsby, and I asked my teacher, what, did this happen? And he went, no. No, it didn't. And I was like, then why are we reading this? You know it's not real, right?
So funny.
But for all intents and purposes, Egbert's a pretty good guy.
Yeah, he's nice.
Well, Molly and Egbert become engaged. And Joel realizes that he's still in love with Molly and races to the wedding. You know, after like a week or two. He also, I want to say, when he races, before he races to the wedding,
mm-hmm.
he has a meeting at CSR.
Yes.
Where he tries to convince everyone that they shouldn't demolish Molly's candy shop because it's bad for the world.
Also, Christopher Maloney's his boss, and there's this great sequence at the Halloween party mm-hmm. where he's dressed up in the superhero costume, and then he can't get it off, so he shits the costume.
And then he blames on someone else, and everyone, like, believes
him. He's like, I must have taken off my costume, and then someone put it on.
And then took a shit in it,
and then put it back.
Yep.
And they're like, I wonder who did it.
Yeah, Jigamajuka's like, I wonder who did it. In the end, he wins. He gets it. They decide not to demolish Molly's store. Mm-hmm. They fire Trevor. They give Joel a big promotion with a corner office. And he meets John Dickricker and gets the Dickricker account.
Yes.
But Joel throws it all away so he can open his coffee shop, Cup of Joel. Get it?
It's Cup of Joe.
But his name is Joel
with an L.
So it's like, it's a plan.
Yeah.
I get it. Yeah, okay. You get it. So, anyway, then he races to the wedding because that's when he finds out
yes.
that the wedding is happening.
And previously, Molly had told him, if I am ever about to get married to someone who I don't actually want to marry, and I leave at the last minute,
I'm going to the Brooklyn Promenade. And he's like,
she's like, do you understand what I'm telling you right now? And he's like, yeah.
Yeah. And so they, it's so silly. He hops in a taxi. His brother's the taxi driver. And he's like, finally got that job, huh? And he's like, you're not the only one who's getting their shit together.
They're so funny together.
And then it's literally one of my favorite scenes is when they go jogging and they're jogging so bad. And then like Joel jogs ahead of him and he's like, wait up.
He's such a good actor.
I wish I could have been in this movie. I'm not famous enough to have been in this movie, but I wish I could have been in this movie.
Yes.
So anyway, he arrives to find that she has already left Egbert at the altar and goes to the Brooklyn Promenade to find
her. First he goes to Boston.
And Boston is hilarious.
It's so freaking funny.
And then they get to the Brooklyn Promenade to find her. They agree to get back together, but Molly's ex-husband, Spike, who was just released from jail... Oh, first of all, Frank shows up. And he's like, I'm gonna get back together. And she's like, it's too late. And she's like, what happened to the yoga instructor? He was like, she died, so that's over. And then he's like, well, it's too late, Frank. And he just goes, okay.
Also, Javier Bardem is Frank.
He just shows up for 2 seconds.
It's like, is that Javier Bardem? Yes, it is.
And now he's gone. And then...
we missed the Judge Judy
miss Judge Judy. Joel does break up with Tiffany because she's a terrible person.
She's a bad girlfriend.
And then Tiffany reveals herself to have been Judge Judy all along.
She, like, takes off the mask like they do at the end of Scooby-Doo 2, Monsters Unleashed.
And it's Judge Judy.
Yeah. And he's like, Judge Judy.
Yeah. Also, oh my god, we missed one of the biggest parts. Joel goes to see his bubby. So he goes to see his bubby whenever he's unsure about his relationship with Molly.
He mentioned his bubby, so bubby's his grandmother.
He goes to visit her, and they talk, and bubby's trying to tell him something, and he has this realization that he needs to get back together with Molly, and she's like, yeah, good for you, Joel, I'm so proud of you.
And then they hug.
And then the hug turns
into, like, almost kissing. He's like, what are we doing?
And she's like, I don't know, but it feels so right. And she's old as hell. And then Then he's like, I want to fuck you so bad, bubby. And she's like, do it, Joel. Don't ever think this. Then they pull up her dress, and it's like a hot young ass.
And he's like grabbing it. It's obviously a butt double.
It's just a butt double. And then he goes, I can't do this. And then they leave. And then he's this like, is what
hey,
my,
bubby. Thanks.
Hey, bubby. Thanks. Pop. It's
hey,
like.
Hey, little bro. Thanks.
There is so. That little like, hey, wait. Thanks. That thing happens so... It's so funny. Ah, this is such a funny movie.
It's so hilarious. We, like, laughed. We, like, cackled at
and
this movie.
And so, Molly's ex-husband, Spike, who was just released from jail, confronts Joel with a sword, by the
samurai
way.
Sword.
Like, a samurai sword. Joel wins the fight, and Spike is taken by the police, only to be shot in the head when he fights with the police officer.
The most realistic part of the movie.
Yeah, literally. Joel and Molly get married, and Joel opens a coffee shop attached to Upper Sweet Side. That's a kind word.
That is kind. It's kind of like a little cart in front.
It's a cart with two burners.
And a cardboard thing that says Upper Sweet Side and Cup of Joel.
Yeah. In the present, Joel and Molly reveal that they are getting divorced, as their marriage has since fallen apart due to increasing debts. Because of it, Molly got addicted to pills and started seeing Frank again. So Molly and Joel mutually decided that they should be friends. After telling their story to Kyle, you know, and Karen, the desperate couple,
Kyle.
Joel and Molly wonder, and then agree, giving their marriage another shot. This is so funny. So they finish telling the story, and they're like, oh, that's too bad. And then Joel's like, so Molly, what do you say? Should we give it another shot? And she's like, why not? and then this is my favorite part. Joel turns around to the camera, looks the camera dead in the eye, and goes, told you it was going to be a crazy day, which he never said.
Never said the entire movie.
Never went to the movie. It's so, and then
told you it was going to be a crazy day. Also, he totally delivered it like Paul Rudd would.
Told you it was going to be a crazy day.
Like, you guys know. You can picture
it. You know.
It.
Paul Rudd is such an eye actor. The facial expressions in this movie are so... Every little bit and gag and all the facial expressions are so beyond. It's so silly.
They obviously watch a ton of rom-coms.
It's so funny. It's like, you've seen every single one of these tropes.
Yes.
It's so excellent. Mm-hmm. This movie is, I can't believe this movie is not more.
It is slept on.
It's slept on. This is like a good freaking comedy.
Listen,
movie.
If you guys want to like laugh out loud, hilarious.
This seems like a movie I'm going to show people.
Oh yeah, it's so funny. I might just buy it, honestly, at some point.
It's got to only be like $2 or $3
yeah.
used.
Yeah, for sure.
It's so good.
It's so unsuccessful, but it's excellent, guys.
It should be more successful. It's this is my new cult following. My cult film. Join the cult of They Came Together. It's so good.
Remember that weird sex scene that they have between Tiffany and Joel?
Yeah. And then
it's like the silhouettes.
And then Bill Hader's like, damn, Joel, that last move. You getting in that pussy hole. You take the pussy, but leave me the hole.
Love Bill Hader.
He's so funny in this. I love when they keep trying to leave and they're like, the story's not over.
And whenever he keeps trying to like say he wants to break up with his wife.
Yeah. It's made me realize I want out. Seriously. I never want to see you again. He's joking. You're joking, right?
Yeah! Yes!
I'm joking! I love you. We're gonna leave you, you nut.
This movie is so good. The Bubby scene literally had me on the floor.
Our jaws dropped. It's just so, there's such little things too. Like so many little things.
All of the facial expressions, all of the actors are so funny.
Max Greenfield is my favorite.
He's so freaking, that's just, he just is acting like his traditional Max Greenfield, but he's very much like the brother in a rom-com.
The brother in a rom-com. It's so funny. Also, there's a scene where Joel's playing basketball with all of his friends, and it's like Kenan Thompson and Jason Mantzoukas and, the guy from 30 Rock.
Oh, Jack McBrayer.
Jack McBrayer. And they're all playing, and some other guy, too, who I think is on SNL, but like a while ago was on SNL. But I can't remember. He has long hair in the
I don't think movie. It was Kyle Mooney.
No, I don't think so. Someone older than that. Someone, like, even older on SNL than that. Look.
I don't see anything.
Oh. Well, it shall remain a mystery then.
Randall Park was in it, though. Remember, he was the guy who played Kim Jong-un.
Oh, yeah. And he's the guy that cries at the business meeting. Oh, I wish I knew his friends were. But he has a little scene where they're, like, all playing basketball. And they just keep shooting and missing horribly. And then going, like, swish!
It just, like, knocks at the very edge of the board.
Yeah, it, like, doesn't hit it at all. And then they keep, like, at the very end, Joel turns back to be like, hey, guys, thanks. And they all are in this, like, stage position of, like, perfect guy formation. It's so good.
Oh, my God. This is so funny.
There's too many
I love the white supremacist parents thing. It's so just great writing. Like, his look of realization whenever he calls her his sweet Aryan princess.
Yeah.
Skin as white as snow.
When they go, so they go to this restaurant, this fancy restaurant, and this waiter is, like, French, and he's like, can I take your coat? And they're like, no, I'm okay. And he's like, well, maybe this isn't the right place for you. But then he sets him anyway, and he has an actual stick up his ass, an actual giant pole up his ass.
Yeah, yeah, that, like, keeps, whenever he turns, just, like, knocks all the dishes
off. But then Molly's like, surprise me with, like, food. And Joel's like, what? Surprise you? And he's like, she's like, yes. And then he's like, okay, the fish special. And she's like, stop. Whatever it is, I'll have it. And Joel's like, Molly?
I'll have the steak plate.
And then it's a disgusting fish plate.
It's like, it's actually called stinky.
It's called, like, stinky doo-doo fish.
I think that's what it's called. The stinky doo-doo fish special.
And she's like, oh. There's also this, I love on their first date, they're in a coffee shop, and they're like, we're looking out the window and just asking each other, you know, getting to know each other. And he's like, they're doing that thing where you look at strangers and you, like, make up what they're saying. So you're you, like, create conversations, but they're both horrible
they're
at
so
it.
Bad at
and
it.
And Joel's like, ah, I mean, that guy, we just came back from the iPhone store. Oh, is that an Apple? Yeah. And then it's... And she's like, wow, you're really good at that.
And she's like, well, I can't do it.
I can't do it. I can't do it. She tries and then just immediately fails.
There's also this weird sequence where they do, like, an original cast recording.
Yeah,
of a
Norah
song.
Jones is in it.
Adam Scott is there.
John Stamos is there for no discernible reason.
And it says, like, they came together. Yeah. Like, it's very meta.
It's very, very funny. This whole movie. Oh, I love. And then at the end, they, like, have the little, like, it breaks away back to Bill Hader and Karen, which, like, mm-hmm. it occasionally does. And Bill Hader's like, oh, that was a really good song. Like, can you buy that somewhere? And they're like, oh, yeah, it's on, you know, it's on all the streaming services. Like, on, they were like, I can't remember. They don't say iTunes, but.
Yeah, like,
weird things that are clearly, like, the name of iTunes and Pandora and things like that. So.
I think it was, like, Spandora or something.
Spandora. Yeah.
Yeah, some stuff like that. You get the deal.
It's so funny. You have to see it.
Guys, all the little details in it are perfect.
I can't describe to you how good this is.
Guys, the Halloween scene with Christopher Maloney, if you love SVU, you have to see him.
Christopher Maloney in this is so good.
He's so funny.
Everyone in it is good. Every single person is really, really funny. Who's the guy that plays Spike?
Oh.
He's famous too.
Yeah.
Hold on. Spike, they came together. Oh, really? You're just gonna make me go to the IMDb? I could have done that myself. There's so many famous people in this.
I know, it's wild.
Oh, Ken Marino.
Oh,
that was the friend. I think this might be in order of appearance purpose. No, it's not. Well, maybe.
Bubby. Oh, Bubby, I want to fuck you so
bad. It's Michael Shannon.
Oh!
That's who it is. Like, yeah. I was like, insane eyes, boy. Yeah, Michael Shannon. There's just so many famous people in this that it hurts.
Yeah, it's great. You guys should definitely watch it.
You must.
I give it a 10 out of 10.
I give it a 10 out of 10, too. It's so funny. It was just as funny the second time. Overall, would watch again. Yes. Overall, will
I will force, show people.
Overall, will force my friends to watch this movie.
Yes.
It's one of those movies that I'm like, sit down!
It's so good.
It is so good. Do you have any trivia? Any interesting trivia?
Not really, just that most of the actors in this were in Wet Hot American Summer, written and directed by David Wayne. Let's see. And it said that they keep mentioning that, like, New York is almost like a character in their story. In addition to Joel mentioning that New York City is, like, another character in the story in the first scene of the movie, this idea is mentioned on every poster and advertisement on the movie's website and in the credits.
As it should be.
Yes. It says that You've Got Mail was a big inspiration for this.
You're not surprising.
Yeah, that's. Okay. Director David Wayne had a small cameo playing Keith, Egbert's brother.
Aw, Keith.
Yeah.
That was a good scene, too. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I have a review. Okay. It's kind of lengthy, but I like it because it really takes a turn.
Oh!
It really, you think it's going one way, and then it just completely flips around.
Okay.
So here we go. This is 1 out of 10. Mm. Should have known better. Better than to subject myself to another Paul Rudd movie.
What?
But my wife wanted a romantic comedy, and I thought a self-aware parody of the genre might have been a happy compromise. It turns out, I did manage to spare myself the gag reflex-inducing by an overdose of mind-bogglingly unrealistic cuteness. But what about the funny part? Well, the movie quickly gets bogged down in its own self-referential masturbatory hullabaloo. Like most so-called comedies today, it does not depend on character or wit, but rather a never-ending stream of nonsensical non-sequiturs, which the brain-fried masses of contemporary America are supposed to find amusing somehow. Overall, a mildly amusing waste of time at best. Of course, being a Hollywood production, the chosen ones who own the major studios could not possibly have let it go without reminding the film's predominantly white audience that being proud of one's white heritage is a bad thing.
No. Yeah. No. 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 He's defending the white supremacist parents.
It's going there.
No,
hold
no,
on.
No. 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 No.
Yup. It sure is. The female lead's parents ask her suitor what he thinks of their beautiful white daughter. shock. Expressions of this nature are only permissible when uttered by non-whites. You can call a black woman a black queen or a Nubian princess. Just a word of advice, you should not call a black woman a Nubian princess. Probably that doesn't sound at all like something you should say to a black woman.
Yeah, I don't think you should ever say that.
Also,
you can just call people queens.
Yeah, you can call her, a queen.
I call male and females alike queens.
But whatever. I mean, sure, black queen. Yeah, that's a thing. People say that. But pointing out that you have a beautiful white daughter is wrong. You hear that, white man?
Being called her Aryan, though.
He does say, my beautiful white daughter. And then, of course, it gets to the part where he's like, did you know that the whites are now the minority in this country because of the race mixers? Like, all of that.
Clearly, they're
supposed to be white supremacists.
Yes, and it was mentioned earlier in the film that Paul Rudd is
Jewish.
Vaguely Jewish, just Jewish enough.
Yeah. And also, let's keep in mind that you can say you have a beautiful daughter without pointing out her race.
Yeah.
But here we go. This is keeps going. The liberal imbecile scriptwriters take it a step further. The parents seem to think that white people should be proud of their heritage like everyone else. I think they mean not proud of their heritage, but they said proud. The trick here is the same American History X pulled. Place legitimate grievances in the lips of white characters, then make them seem crazy.
Are they?
They said that the white people, the white supremacists, had legitimate grievances.
So they're standing up for Edward Norton's character in American History X prior to his transformation.
Yeah.
Okay.
The next thing out of their mouth is that whites are now a minority in this country, more truth peppered in, because of this supposed race mixing.
My jaw's on the ground.
I was reading this and I was like, pretty standard.
And then I was like, whoa!
Hold on! They keep going! They keep digging the hole as deep as possible. Combining two legitimate facts, whites should celebrate their heritage, and whites are becoming the minority in a land that their forefathers built.
Ah, you mean that all of the enslaved people of those forefathers built?
Hey, the New World was tamed by men who were brave, and men who were strong, and 6 million slaves. I don't know, just me. With a cleverly created piece of disinformation is a typical tactic employed by hateful anti-white Hollywood chosenites and their assorted self-hating white liberal lackeys. The sad truth is, most whites haven't dared to think far enough to know that the real reason whites are a minority and not mis- I don't know what this word is. Please read that for me.
I think that he just doesn't know what miscegenation?
Miscegenation is what it looks like, yeah.
Miscegenation is the interbreeding of people considered to be of different racial types.
Okay, so the reason it's not race mixing. But the Naturalization and Immigration Act of 1965, signed into law by Lyndon B. Johnson, as well as the Third World Plague slithering past the southern border every night by thousands. Oh my god.
Mexicans!
That's who he's talking about.
He just called a group of people a plague?
He called them a third world plague, slithering past the southern border every night by the thousands.
I am gonna throw up.
This is easily the worst one we've come across so far.
This is almost as bad as Holes.
Holes was really bad, especially
because it didn't go on that long.
No, it didn't really fucking dig itself a hole.
It really just kind of mentioned it, and you were like, whoa.
Whoa, you're like,
but
that's
this
a casual
is like
racism.
A manifesto.
Yeah, there's more. But who will dare to bring any of this up, even if they are aware of it, when the all-powerful Ashkenazi?
Like Ashkenazi Jews.
Oh my god, no, he did not say that. Oh my god!
Can you reread it? I didn't.
Yeah. But who will dare to bring any of this up, even when they are aware of it, when the all-powerful Ashkenazi media has already made it clear that sane people don't think this way?
Who's like, so he basically just said the Jew-run media?
Yeah! Ashkenazi, which is the way meaner way to say the Jew-run media. Just more poisonous cultural Marxist claptrap. The legacy of the Frankfurt school rats who later crawled over to the United States to spread their vile anti-Western rhetoric via our liberal arts department and later publishing houses, movie studios, radio stations, newspapers, and magazines. They are talking about the Jews who escaped from Germany. Frankfurt in Germany. That's who he's literally talking about. Okay, here's the last line.
Okay.
Just strap in.
Okay.
So we just said that the Jews all came over here, right? And they took over all our media. That's okay. Their day came once, not so long ago, and it will come again.
No.
Yes. Yeah, I'm not fucking with you.
You need to go to his profile.
Okay, hold on. I gotta pull up IMDb because I take screenshots of it. Pull it up. I'm always afraid.
What?
It. Yeah.
The fuck?
Yeah, okay. What? Should have known better. Here it is.
Okay, I wanna see. I wanna see what other movies this guy has
reviewed. I think I have to click on this little guy. See all reviews. His name is Der Schnibbler.
Sounds a little...
I gotta find a movie that I know.
Yeah.
So that I can say, I don't know hardly any of these. I do know Dark Tourist, kind of, but...
Dear John.
Dear John, I know Dear John.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Well, he did 1 out of 10.
Doesn't deliver.
Howard the Duck got 7 out of 10.
The Strangers.
7 out of 10. That's not going to have anything. Across the Universe. I'm trying to find one that, like, I really know.
Yeah.
That's, like, that, like, he gave a bad review. He does a lot of horror.
Interesting. Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Nah.
I wonder how many of these are racist.
I don't know. I've never heard of a lot of these. Or, like, have never seen them.
Yeah.
Oop, I had a hiccup. I don't... This is insane. I'm gonna go back up to the Nazi one.
Yeah.
It looked to me like it was... I'll just read the little, like, synopsis of the movie so we can get, like, a good idea.
I'd love to see his American History X review if he had one. Oh, my
freaking God. I already lost it. It's called Nazi Overlord.
Okay.
And it is a D-Day... it says, a D-Day rescue mission turns ugly when a band of Allied soldiers battle with horrific experiments created by the Nazis.
Okay.
So this sounds like dumb. Doesn't deliver. We are all, of course, waiting for some kind of crazy genetically engineered Nazi monsters, but it never happens. It's a lot of aimless action and empty pseudoscientific babble. Oh, and of course, much talk of the master race myth.
You literally just talked about how the master race is not a myth.
I think he means... the myth that there is no master race. Let's see if... I wonder if he does have a American History X.
See, he talked about it, which made me think that he might have done one on it, which would be...
He's written a lot of reviews!
Dude. They came together... Oh, yeah.
They came together.
Mandy, which is a wild movie.
Holy crap.
Dude!
This guy's written so many freaking reviews. A lot of these are for things I've literally never heard of. Or, like, nobody needs you to write a review on that.
Inglourious Bastards.
Okay. Inglourious Bastards!
We know this movie really well. This is probably our favorite Tarantino movie.
But yeah, it is mine. Let's see, 5 out of 10. He gave it a 5 out of 10. Nasty American Mongrels. The film thinks it portrays the Americans as these tough guys taking out the trash and Germans as robotic drones. The irony is how these American Hollywoodites making these films are too narcissistic and arrogant to register that they are actually making the Germans come off as gracious, noble fighters while the Americans are just a bunch of nasty, foul-mouthed mongrels.
What?
He reviewed Anthony Bourdain's No Reservations
and gave it a 1 out of 10? Okay. A failure was the last word.
Okay, babe.
Did you review The Grudge?
He did, and I was trying to see if it was racist against the Japanese.
Sleepaway Camp.
I read this guy's review for Sleepaway Camp, but it was annoying.
Yeah.
It was just like a normal, boring review.
I really just want to know.
I can't believe how insane that They Came Together review was, and then, like, none of the rest of these reviews are as insane.
Was he on, like, crack?
I don't know. I don't know what he saw in that movie that made him so mad. He's written so many reviews.
I literally just want to know what Jesus Camp.
Jesus Camp, he gave an 8 out of 10.
Oh, no.
Uh-oh.
Have you seen Jesus Camp?
I have, yeah.
Okay, I have too.
Okay, Jesus Camp, if you guys haven't seen it, it's like a documentary.
About, like, evangelicals having, you guys know if you're from around Joplin, evangelical, like, summer camps where kids get sent to have their minds brainwashed and they, like, with the power of Jesus.
And they learn to speak in tongues and stuff.
And they learn to, like, submit to Jesus and probably get abused, so.
Yep, okay. So this guy gave it an 8 out of 10.
Yeah.
Which I would also give. It's a good
movie. A good documentary.
A degenerate liberal's nightmare. From all the things I read, I was ready to believe this documentary was going to show a bunch of people dressed in devil suits screaming at a bunch of crying children about the evils of the world and how they must go out there and start a war for Jesus. Give me a break. These evangelical types might be a bit extreme for those of us not used to being around that kind of crowd, but the way they spoken of as if they were some kind of lunatic fringe who abuse these children with their beliefs are pathetic.
I mean, they're brainwashing them, so...
Levi and Rachel are both very bright, extremely intelligent, likable young kids who seem very earnest in what they're saying. Of course, it's not as if they had a chance to learn anything different, but whose child does? You grow up in a society and socioculture of religious milieu in which you are born, and that's what you learn. But in the case of a bunch of Christians, we are supposed to believe it's bad because why? That's the question.
I think that any religion
doing that is bad. Agreed. The reason so many idiots are talking about this documentary in such terms, I found it on a movie discussion forum where it was mentioned in the thread, most depressing movies you ever saw, stupidly.
I mean, it's pretty depressing.
Is that Christians are the people who created this country, and that is their mores, which all the degenerates, perverts, and deviants want to eradicate so that they may feel comfortable. People who will be shocked and depressed over this documentary, the self-righteous morons, are the same people who live in big cities. The people who think teaching your children about creationism is abhorrent and backwards as to be outrageous. These people will see Levi being homeschooled and instantly equate it with weirdness and some kind of a fringe ideology. What a shame it must be that Levi will never get to go to a public school where his intelligence can be held in check until the stupidest kid in class has the chance to catch up, and where he can be properly indoctrinated with politically correct filth. And how about Rachel? Deep down inside them, the degenerate liberal scum know when they see a beautiful little girl like Rachel that she will never end up screwing around promiscuously in junior high, and she won't enjoy her first spliff with some piece of subhuman ghetto garbage boyfriend who is 10 years older than she, and she won't have the gift of being liberated from a two-parent home, which liberal trash consider to be a form of slavery since it goes against their every deviant streak, so she can run around like a little piece of trash all night long by the time she reaches her teens, and this is what really kills them. A little girl won't be taking lessons in whoredom from Britney Spears either. More's the pity. They are also terrified when they see Levi's mother pose the question, "What happened to my country?" Because they know very well what will happen if the people whose forefathers built this place wake up one day and put an end to all the degeneracy and filth around them. Americans are supposed to believe their country belongs to every piece of disease-ridden, criminal-prone trash that wants to enter it, that they are evil if they insist on living in neighborhoods composed of people who resemble them. Unless you are not white, then you can live anywhere you like. That they are somehow twisted if they don't glorify homosexuals as cultural heroes or celebrated underdogs, as they are simply sick of it, especially now with this commie bastard in the White House. This is written when Obama wasn't president. I think the people in this documentary are a bit extreme, for lack of a better word. I sure as hell wouldn't send my kids to some camp to be educated and speak in tongues, but not so much because I think these people are weird or something. It's just that I don't see a need for a place to put an emphasis on organized religion in one's life. Going to church on Sundays is enough for me, or at least theoretically would be, since I don't even do that. This documentary was interesting enough. Nothing these people do is any worse than what the Muslims do with their children, or what any religion or society does with its children. They teach them what they believe themselves. Big whoop. Get over it and stop acting shocked, appalled, and saddened, you leftist morons.
Racist.
So racist!
Racist.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. I love when we find these little rabbit holes of, like, people on IMDb, and you're like, whoa.
This person is unhinged.
I hope I never meet you.
Wow. Sorry, and thank you for going on that ride with us.
Wow.
Because that was, we did not think that was going to happen.
Wow. All right.
Watch Rebecca on YouTube for Patreon.
Okay, guys.
All right, thanks.
Wow.
Bye.
Wow.